Hello, awesome people. Welcome to Embrace the Pivot. I'm Dr. C. Robinson, your host for the show. Join me as we discover what pivoting actually means and how you can embrace your pivot during life's transition. Happy Wednesday, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful week. Thank you for joining me today. I taught college for 5 years, and within that time frame, I taught roughly 400 students. It was like right on the borderline. And since then, I have maintained relationships with a lot of my former students. It's about 40% of them I still keep in touch with on a yearly basis, some more frequently. But it's always awesome to see their success, how far they've come, and I'm always rooting for them. When I decided to take a hiatus from teaching, I didn't realize how much I was going to miss the students. Yes, some of them were pains in the butts, 100%, but there were so many of them that you could just see the light inside of them, and you just knew that they were going to do something awesome in this world and be someone awesome in this world. And as I reflect on that pivot, I realize that as much as I taught them, they taught me. And they were really part of the inspiration behind me transitioning away from teaching for a little bit. And right now I'm getting that itch again, and I would really love to start teaching again, which I'm working on, one of my current pivots. But they were the inspiration for me to start doing bigger and better things. Because just as much as I set high expectations for themselves, they set high expectations for me. And I wanted to make sure that I fulfilled their expectations as well. And for today's episode, I actually am bringing back one of my former students, now friend, and I am helping him with a project. Matt Assad is one of my former students who I just knew it, right? From like class number one, and he took me for 2 semesters. Class number one, I knew there was something there. He is very much a rising star. And I'm really excited that he was able to join me as a co-host for this episode. Todd Hoffman joins me on today's episode. He is the founder and CEO of Storied Media Group, which is the largest independent curator and broker of high-end journalism to the global film and TV community. Through Storied Media Group's digital platform, Story Scout, tens of thousands of creatives around the globe read the stories that translate into high-end content, which Storied Media Group then brokers. Todd has been an adjunct professor at USC School of Cinematic Arts for 20 years, where he teaches independent producing at the Peter Stark Producing Program. And that's also where he received his MFA. He was a literary agent. He has done content, and now he's a founder. He has a really cool story to share about how he successfully pivoted in his career. Not only will you get to learn more about Todd, but you'll also learn a little bit more about where the streaming industry is now headed, especially after the pandemic. Everyone, please welcome Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. You have a very eclectic career. You're a 25-year veteran of studio and independent filmmaking. You are a literary agent. Then you transitioned over to the head of media rights group of ICM. You're an adjunct professor. And then in 2013, you launched Storied Media Group, which houses Story Scout. So why don't you take us through that journey?
Well, how much time do you have? Because it's many, many hours in the... But, you know, I think that one of the first things that hit me in the beginning of my career was fear. I think I ultimately embraced the pivot. When I came out of college in 1989, I was recruited to do management consulting, which is I thought, even though I was interested in entertainment, a good kind of business foundation. And I was promptly fired within about 5 months because the company was running out of money. So 50% of the people that they hired, they fired. I was in New York with a briefcase, in many suits, and wondering what the hell did I just do? And even though I'd been interested in entertainment and filmmaking and acting and Hollywood, for the previous 5 years, I went somewhere and kind of did the safe thing, and the safe thing fired my ass, and I was out on the street. I ended up getting a job as an assistant to the executive producer, or actually, I got a job on a soap opera to be the assistant. And ultimately, every day I was pouring through the Hollywood Reporter and looking at careers in the on the move section. And somebody there said saw what I was doing and said, "You can't get there from here. If you want to be in Hollywood, this is not the way to it. You'll end up as an executive producer of a soap opera." And so I listened to him, and ultimately, I had met somebody at the first job who told me that he was interested in me in the London office doing entertainment consulting. And I called that guy and said, "I think I've made a mistake. I was very interested in going to London." And he interviewed me in London, and I got the job. So I was hired back by the same company that fired me, and then went to London. But I had heard after about 6 months that there was this really unique program at USC Film School that was a producer program. And I applied to that and got in. And so, with multiple pivots within 2 years of coming out of college. And that really started my Hollywood career, if you will. And I found myself at USC studying producing. I mean, ultimately, that's what led to my kind of where I am now. I mean, it actually, once I started, it was filled with multiple pivots as well.
How do you go then from producing to literary agent?
Quite by chance, after grad school, I started doing script development with a producer, worked for a production company for 3 years. When I felt like I was ready to go out on my own, I did. And I actually started producing independent films and got good and lucky at producing independently. And I made six movies in 3 years. I said it was luck, but I suppose I made my own luck. Because out of the blue, I got a phone call from an agency that asked me if I was interested in running their independent finance group. And that was, again, another pivot. I felt like my independent producing career at the time was not, on fire, and I felt like becoming an agent and working inside a structure like an agency would put legs on my career. And so I hung up my producing career for the time being, knowing, I think, in my heart that I wasn't going to be an agent forever, but I felt like it would be a good next step. And so that's really how it happened. And then within 2 years, I decided within an agency structure, I didn't want to be just somebody who worked at an agency. I wanted to actually have my own book of business. And so I started representing writers and directors.
Now, you mentioned something interesting. You said you made your own luck, or you created your own luck. And a big part of successfully pivoting is being prepared for when that opportunity or luck presents itself. So how are you able to create your own luck? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it's a good point, and I think that there's that maxim that the harder you work, the luckier you get. And also, I think it's about being able to be aware of when that luck knocks on the door and opens it, and then you decide whether or not you want to go through that door. I got I learned a lot, and I was good at what I did. And because of that, and because I was out there and meeting people, and I had some successful independent movies, people noticed, and an agent that I knew, one day took me out to lunch and said, "How would you like to do this?" And that was, I suppose, the lucky part that that when they needed somebody, I was right there.
And what was that aha moment for you to start your own company?
Flash forward 11 years, and I suppose that I knew, as I was saying earlier, I knew that in my heart of hearts, I wasn't going to be an agent for the rest of my life. And so I realized that there was this confluence of my wanting to do something else for the next stage of my career, and an acknowledgement that what I was doing at ICM in running the media rights group, that there was what I thought a better way of doing my job, and that was by bouncing out and starting an agency agnostic way to sell the intellectual property that I was selling. And so it was those two things. And then I realized, you know what, maybe I have to figure out a way to do this. And that last contract that I signed was a 2-year contract, and I decided to do a 2-year contract instead of a 3-year. Then I knew I had 2 years to figure it out. And then I got to work.
How were you able to manage your mindset from being, I'm employed under an agency, to, okay, I'm going to be, an entrepreneur?
The first thing was, I was so I was beholden, and the people that were employing me and paying me every day were friends of mine. And I knew every day I had to continue to do a really good job for them while I tried to figure out what my personal next step was. So I didn't feel like a double agent, if you will. I continued to do a good job for them. And I knew, when you're in an agency, when you decide to move agencies, that's when you start to feel like, a double agent. And moving is very can be very difficult, and relationships can sour. In my case, I wasn't leaving to go to another agency. I was leaving to do something entrepreneurial. And so when I left, leaving was not a bump. It was, I think, disappointing for them, but it wasn't a terribly bumpy ride because I was going out on my own.
And how has Story Scout evolved over the past 7, 8 years?
Well, ultimately, Story Scout evolved, I'd say, out of necessity. When I left ICM, I left to create Storied Media Group, which was an agency-agnostic way to sell intellectual property, which I felt was the better mousetrap. And that's what I was referring to before. I'd love to say that I had this, grand vision once I was in the agency to create Story Scout. It didn't happen that way. It was really, necessity was the mother of invention. And ultimately, it started, I'd say 3 years into my venture, curating the IP and storing it on a database. And then we started to tag the data with meta tags that were more favorable to the way Hollywood would want to look at the articles. So we were tagging by genre and character and location, and not your normal Google meta tags. And then ultimately, then I started thinking, maybe this. If we spruced up this database, it might actually be valuable as a SaaS business, and that's what started the process. And then I did a lot of market testing and chatting to friends, asking whether or not they thought this system would be interesting, and they all said yes, and that's what got me on my way.
Thanks.
Awesome. Todd, I wanted to ask you something. Obviously, you have an extensive background in the entertainment field, but when you came up with the idea to start Storied Media Group, was it still something that required you to get out of your comfort zone, or even though you had all of that background, was it a simple adjustment?
Anything but simple. I'm generally risk averse and was making, you know, a fairly nice living. And so the first thing that I had to do is to figure out how I could jump out and not be instantly poor. I had and still have two children who needed food and shelter. And, you know, even though I have a wife that worked and still does, I needed to, you know, to pull my weight. And so the first thing I really had to do was figure out how I could actually finance the operation so that I could actually have time to build what I thought I could build successfully.
And, you know, one thing I want to ask you, obviously, this last year with the pandemic, we've seen streaming really become astronomical, especially with a lot of viewers right now being at home. But what do you think the streaming industry will play a factor in the independent film industry moving forward? Do you think it'll help or hurt?
I think it actually is going to help, and there's already been data that suggests that it will, and that it is.
Yeah.
The first thing, you know, I unfortunately spent a lot of time making some films that very few people saw, and which is, you know, from a commercial standpoint is really disappointing. I, you know, was paid not a lot of money, but enough to continue to survive back when I, you know, when my net was a lot smaller. But it's really disappointing when you do all that work and they don't get the kind of distribution that you like. The nice thing about streaming is, you know, there are tens of millions of people on these streamers. So you know, if you have 100,000 people watch your film, oftentimes that's more than, that's, you know, multiples more than the number that would have seen the film before.
Absolutely.
But it's more than 100,000. I mean, millions of people are seeing the film. And ultimately, from a career perspective, the one thing that filmmakers want is for people to see their work. And I think streamers are providing that, which is great.
And I know you talked about that you were an adjunct professor at your alma mater, USC, and I'm sure Cheryl can relate to this question in a way, but what has that experience been like for you to be able to pay forward all of those ups and downs that you've had throughout your career and being able to share them with your students over the last almost two decades?
Well, I love and have always loved teaching, and ultimately I think I get more out of it than they do, but really enjoyed it's definitely, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, every year in this program, there are 25 kids or young adults, and they go out into the world, and it's their relationships that I continue to have throughout my career. And every now and then, you know, well, I often forget the names and faces, and, you know, 10 years, you know, forth, I am in a meeting and they say, hey, you were my professor of independent producing, and, you know, I still have this, or I still remember that. And that's really fun. But the business is perpetually changing. And so for me to be able to keep up with it and to give them and teach them that kind of information is really enjoyable to me. And I also have a one night in the seminar is all about careers and how to chart careers. And so I really enjoy that night too.
Awesome.
So with streaming now, do you find that your students are more interested in developing content for the streaming platforms, or is there still a big push to say, hey, I want to see my art on the big screen?
When I joined, when I went to grad school in 1991, the program was called the Peter Stark Motion Picture Producing Program. And it's now different. It's not Motion Picture is out, because now it's all content and storytelling, and people are looking to tell great stories, regardless of whether they're 90 to 120 minutes or whether they're limited series or whether they're ongoing series. The point is that there's telling stories. And so producers are now trained to look at story differently, but ultimately, I'd say probably 90% of producers are producing content rather than just TV or just features, which I think is great.
All right. So from the time you started your career to now, how has your leadership style evolved?
When I was at the agency, I was really more part of a group. And, you know, I've always embraced team sports. I grew up playing team sports. So I kind of delighted in being a part of that group. And then ultimately when I was, when I ended up running Media Rights, the joke was that it was really a group of three. So I was a manager of two. And one of the agents was older and pretty much a rogue element of the group, and he was unmanageable. So my leadership style was just make sure nothing went wrong rather than kind of chart this grand course. When I jumped out and I started Storied Media Group, I was a group of two. It was me and an assistant. And ultimately, there's no real leadership style. You know, my main goal was just keep plotting ahead and stay focused on where I wanted to go. My company's now 10 people, and so there really is, you know, leadership that's involved. And ultimately, the style, if you will, is to really lead by example, to try and work as smart as possible, and as, you know, it's more important to work smart than hard and long.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I lead by making sure that everything I do has a strategy. And so when I push my employees, I always ask them, what's the strategy behind their thinking? Because I want them to think strategically. And ultimately, the main thing that I require is that they walk through the door every day, or in the past year, you know, they get to work wherever they are. If there's no door and they're just working from their apartments or homes, that they know exactly what it is that this company wants to do every day. What is our vision? And stay focused.
Yeah. And if someone came to you stating that they were about to pivot in their career, what would be three essential steps you would share to help make that pivot successful?
The first would be to ask yourself, how would you move forward if you knew you couldn't fail? So what steps would you take to ensure success? And don't worry about failure, because failure is ultimately a good thing. You learn tremendous amounts about the marketplace and about your own capabilities through failure. I've been fired twice, and I've failed multiple times. I'll probably fail later today. But ultimately, you need to be able to learn from it and shapeshift.
Yeah.
Right? So I'd say that's the first thing. The second thing, as I was saying a couple of minutes ago, is have a strategy. You have to have a strategy about where you want to be. What I always think about is, you know, where you want to be, where do you want to be in 5 years? And if you have a sense of where you want to be, then you can actually reverse engineer the course. And if you know where you want to be in 5 years, you can say, well, before that, I need to do X. And before X, I need to do Y. Before Y, I need to do Z, and that leads me back to right where I am. And then you can almost chart that course. This advice is you know, fraught with contradictions, because, you know, I would be prepared to listen to experts and friends and pivot if need be. I definitely learned some really good advice in grad school that, you know, that if you walk into a room and three people tell you you're drunk, lie down. You know, it's good to listen to people. And, you know, this recently happened in our company where we've been in the middle of a raise, but people are also telling us that we might be betwixt and between the need for a raise. And so last week we decided, you know what, we've got plenty of money. Let's just keep going and listen to the marketplace. So, you know, have a strategy, but also be available to listen. You know, I think I'd say the final thing, and it's certainly easier said than done, but figure out a way to ensure that money won't be a problem for 1 to 2 years in order to allow yourself to begin your pivot. You know, it's so hard to concentrate on a new direction if every day you have to worry about money.
Yeah.
Because it's going to pull you. And so do whatever it takes. And of course, it's easier, you know, again, easier said than done, but, you know, borrow money, take a night job. You know, in the beginning, right out of grad school, when I decided to be a producer instead of getting a job, I worked and delivered food for a delivery service at night while I worked during the day. And that money covered me and covered my nut, so I could do what I wanted to do. But if you can figure out a way to, you know, to borrow or to get enough money for a year to two, that should, you know, that should get you on your way. So I'd say those are three pieces of advice I would give.
Point number one, because so many people are afraid to fail, that in actuality, you fail by not even trying. So thank you for sharing point one. I love it. Is there anything else you would like to talk about that we didn't touch on?
Well, I think, you know, when you think about the name of your podcast, Embrace the Pivot, I think that in careers, you know, everybody has to embrace the pivot, because unless you're, you know, 90% of careers pivot and they pivot multiple times, perhaps, you know, the trajectory of being a medical doctor or the trajectory of being a lawyer have fewer, if any, pivots. You just kind of work up a chain. But most careers, I wouldn't say are fraught with pivots. I think that the exciting thing is that they do pivot, and that allows you to constantly assess where you are at this point in your life and what you want to do next. And it might be, you know, something very similar, and it might be something different. But embracing the pivot means embracing challenge and embracing risk. And it's a hell of a lot more fun. But if you listen to your gut and you listen to and look at your skill set and think about what you could do if you couldn't fail, I think you're more likely to have success going forward.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. Where can my listeners find you on social media?
Well, we are at storiedmediagroup.com and storyscout.com. Anybody that's interested in getting to know us, please connect.
Awesome. Well, Todd, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you both. It was a lot of fun.
You can follow me, Dr. C, on Instagram at embracethepivot. I hope all of you embrace your pivot.